Hugh, good evening. Good evening. It's just after 9 p.m. here in fashionable and elegant Little Saigon, Seattle. On September the 13th, 2019, all of the human beings that inhabit these places are heading out for the night. Do we know where they're going? Are they walking up the Broadway to get a little action going? Yeah, so it's a great day, a great time to be here in Seattle on this Friday the 13th. I know that we are all asking ourselves in this wary moment of our consciousness and our soul, where from and where to do we go? Do we have an opening to an outer realm? Can we pierce the veil of our own stupidity? Is it possible for us to take things to a whole new level? A completely different dimension? I really don't know, folks, to be honest with you. These days, I just cannot tell.
Are you there?
Oh, fuck.
Are you there, Dan?
Oh.
Dan? Dan?
Yes!
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Dan.
Oh.
Hello, Dan.
Hello.
This is Limbus 12. I have large objects trapped in my butthole.
Oh boy, that sounds great, Glimbus.
Large objects?
Yes.
Trapped?
Yes, I hear what you're talking about here. It sounds
in
great.
My butthole.
That
my
sounds...
butthole, Dan. Dan.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes. You fuck, Glimbus.
Do you hear what I'm saying, you nasty old fuck?
You're a... Oh, you know what, robot? Sounds like you're having a
about
good...
About my butthole.
I hear about your Friday night butthole.
My butthole hurts.
Oh,
it hurts, Dan.
I know...
Fuck.
Oh...
You don't fucking care.
I actually do not care, you fuck.
Okay, have a great Friday the 13th, and fuck you, Dan.
Ugh.
Michael Myers will kill you, Dan.
Okay.
You miserable old fuck.
Fuck you, Glimbus.
Bye, you fuck.
Bye, Glimbus. Folks, whenever Glimbus calls or contacts me through the Hyperverse, I realize that as pathetic as I am, there's at least one artificially intelligent bagel toaster in this universe that is more pathetic than me. Poor Glimbus is heading out into the night, probably up to Broadway, but I almost said probably up to Brumbly. If you're not aware, if you go up to Broadway in Seattle, there's a street called Rio Rancho. The street only exists on the second Tuesday of every April of a leap year. But sometimes in the darkness of a Friday night, especially if the people of Willy Wonka's have turned on the Goostalizer, and in those moments when the fabric of time and space fold upon themselves like a cosmic burrito, Rio Rancho Street appears, and there's a place for every kind of monkey fuck there. Whatever dark delights you have, whatever kinds of D-cell batteries you like to shove up your butt, if that's your thing, baby. But there's also a taco shop on Rio Rancho Street that sells tacos made of gato. It's called Gatacos. The name is too clever by half. Yes, on Rio Rancho Street, in the Brumbly Zone of Broadway, you can get gato tacos, you know, cat tacos. Indeed, folks. This is a great, great Friday night. We had a call from Glimbus. That's wonderful. I do not wish to be talking to Beans for a while because there's reason to believe that Beans is currently working on some sort of monstrous plan, and I don't really want to know about it, and if he calls in, he'll tell me about it, and I just don't want to be involved. I'm just, you know... What can you say about a French bulldog other than it ought not to exist? It ought not to exist. There's nothing about it that says existence to me. It is, in fact, a walking, yelping, barking, smelly, vomiting, poopy manifestation of our own recognition that death comes for us all. Like a French bulldog in the night, havel, havel. Death comes for us all. Death comes for you in the darkness of a night, like a French bulldog laying eggs in your trachea. Death comes for us all. Yep, but anyways, I don't want to get off on a tangent. So I've had lots of comments ever since I started podcasting, and technically I started podcasting in 2015. I've only been on SoundCloud for about a year. This is my anniversary on SoundCloud. Ho ho, let's have an anniversary party. Let's go party because I've been on SoundCloud a year. Let's go party because I'm pretty certain I'm currently being shadow banned, but hey, I would be shadow banned everywhere. That's okay, folks. Anyways, I've been on SoundCloud for about a year, but people will say things like, I like it when you're funny. Why can't you be more funny? And here's the thing, folks. I get it. I understand it. You want an MPAA rating. You want me to tell you when I'm going to be funny and silly on my keyboard, or play a silly harmonica, or tell funny little silly stories about a French bulldog named Beans. I get it. Okay, I'm not stupid. I live on planet Earth in 2019. I understand why 90% of you in Seattle that quote-unquote have lives walk around staring gormlessly at your smart devices. I get it. Because if you put down your smart device, if you actually had to have a real conversation about the actual challenges facing us, and I don't mean the make-believe challenges, folks. I don't mean the ones that are in our heads. I don't mean the make-believe ones. Okay? And I also don't mean the redirects, okay? I don't mean the mistaking a effect for a cause. Like homelessness, for example. Which is a real problem, but it's also a real effect. It's not really a cause. It is actually... You could in many ways consider homelessness in Seattle and around the world as the waste heat of a world economic engine that's currently sputtering and will likely crash in the near future. So yeah, I don't want to get all off on that because I talk about homelessness a lot, but people will say things like, why can't you be more funny? Why can't you be more funny? And I guess what I'll tell you is this. I could develop a rating. Like, I thought about this rating. I'd call it Faloa. For a lot of audiences. And I would have a little hashtag that says Faloa. And it almost sounds Polynesian, like, aloha, hello, how about Faloa? When you get off your plane in Oahu, the first thing they say to you is Faloa and hand you a lei. And then they show you where you can get laid. Yeah, that's more like Busan, Korea. Anyways, yeah, have you ever been to Busan, Korea? You ever notice that there's not a Burt Bacharach song or a fucking song with, you know, Dionne Warwick from the 60s saying, "Do you know the way to Busan?" No, there's no song like that, folks, because Busan, if you've never been there, you're going to want to go to Texas Street. You see, that's not for all audiences. If I started talking about Texas Street and Busan, about my experiences with some Russian hookers, which I did not have sex with, but had some conversations with, probably spoke the most Russian with anyone, in, I think it was October of 1998, during a deployment to Korea. We were stuck in Busan for a few weeks. The smelly, nasty drunkets and drunkards of 3rd Brigade Combat Team. But I gotta tell you, if I tell you about Texas Street, if I go into that issue, even though I didn't do anything quote-unquote bad, but if I describe Texas Street to you, it would be kind of gross. And that's the reality, folks. There's a lot of stuff in the world that isn't great, that's gross, that isn't pretty. And here's the other thing, too. You have tons of people on YouTube, on SoundCloud, telling you stories about ancient aliens and showing you guys them playing video games and getting angry and being silly and talking about nothing of consequence. You have tons of options for nothing of consequence, folks. You have tons of options. You don't need to go see Uncle Dan. You can see all kinds of people. In fact, that is the kind of speech that is currently protected. If you want to know what kind of speech the system loves, for the most part, probably loves more than anything else, it is the speech that says nothing. It is the speech that truly transmits nothing of value, that forces no discussion, that really doesn't make you think, and at most just makes you chuckle. And if you're saying, "Well, Dan, you're just a whiny, nasty old man, just like Glimbus said, you don't want to have fun," and that's not it at all, folks. I would be okay with all the silly, silly stuff if we were also willing to admit that all the voices need to be heard, including the voices that say maybe everything isn't okay. Including the voices that say, you know what, that Como documentary about Seattle is dying? Yeah, maybe it's kind of propaganda. Maybe there's a deeper story there. Maybe the truth is there are a lot of property owners in Seattle that don't want to deal with the fact that homelessness is waste energy, waste heat. It's basically a leak from a broken economic engine. That's what it is, folks. We are seeing a broken paradigm manifest itself. And when I say broken, I mean broken. Excuse me, folks. I'm going to take a little water here. People. No matter how you feel about healthcare, the military, smart apps, and flipping homes, you cannot have a whole economy where that's all that you fucking do. And oh, by the way, you also just do a lot of banking and financial bullshit. There is no healthy economy in that. That economy is doomed to fail, especially if one of the legs of your fucking chair is a pyramid scheme around something that everybody needs, and that's called shelter. That economy fails, and guess what? If you turn shelter, okay, and I think a lot of people in Seattle don't get this. It's so complicated. If you turn shelter into a wealth-generating pyramid scheme where you expect your shelter to earn 15 to 20% year on year, you will have homelessness, probably with a positive correlation pretty close to fucking one. which means for every dollar of quote-unquote real value or nominal value you think your home gains over time, you are going to have more homeless people. If you don't understand that, I'm so sorry that you don't understand everybody needs shelter. And that, yeah, guess what? You in your fashionable neighborhood expecting $1 million from some necessary STEM worker who's just showing up and frankly leaving a hellhole worse than the one here. This is becoming a hellhole, but not as bad. It's like the Indian taxi driver told me. He thinks it's so nice here. He comes from fucking India. He comes from a place where people are robbing water trucks so that they can fucking have water to drink. He comes from a place where the temperatures are spiking into a range where humans cannot live. You cannot really live as a human being at 120 degrees Fahrenheit with God knows what humidity. You really can't. You can endure it like being in a steam room, but eventually you fucking die. If you don't understand what's going on, fine. But if you are sitting in some nice neighborhood someplace, bemoaning the homelessness and expecting to retire on the value of your home, then you are part of the problem, but you're too fucking stupid to realize it. Anyways, like I said, I tell it like I see it, and I very well could be wrong. Okay, I'm a human being. I am not perfect. I am one voice. In a free society, we should have as many people speaking as possible. And guess what? The market, an actual free market of ideas. I don't mean the bullshit censorship. I don't mean what we have now. But an actual free market of ideas, ideas that are worthy of recognition will survive. That is how it will work, because I have faith in people, okay? I have faith in human beings. I do believe a small percentage of us are monsters, in a sense. And I also believe that's one of the core problems of government, that it tends to attract the monsters like a fucking magnet. It doesn't mean that everybody that works for government is a monster. That's not true. But it seems to me that at the very top, these are monstrous people. They're not people that give a shit about human life. Not the way that I do, not the way that probably you do. Yeah, I could have a rating that sounds like a Polynesian word called Faloa. I could have a little hashtag that says, you know, for a lot of audiences. For a lot of audiences, you could listen to this and you don't have to worry about being triggered. You don't have to worry about being offended. You don't have to worry about having any uncomfortable ideas injected into your normalcy bias. I don't see how I would be helping any of you. Yeah. So I've been trying to untangle a problem in some of my recent podcasts, and it deals with the following. Can human beings procreate and utilize the world without limits? Because when I was growing up in the United States of America, we had a president named Ronald Reagan, and he won in the year 1980 against Jimmy Carter. And when Jimmy Carter would talk about, you know, how we need to get used to less and wearing his sweatshirt, his sweater next to the fire, his fireside sweater talks, that Jimmy Carter during the energy crisis. Yeah, at that time, back in the day, way back when, we had a president who attempted to say something that most Americans just did not want to hear. And I'm going to tell you guys, folks, I don't know what kind of animal Jimmy Carter is. I don't even know. Is he still alive? I think he's still alive. But I don't know what kind of animal, whether or not he's still alive, Jimmy Carter is. Okay? I don't know if he is a legitimately good guy who happened to be a nuclear submarine commander or whatever, and happened to be involved in a lot of deep state bullshit, but on some level he was just a hooker with a heart of gold. He could have very, you know, Jimmy Carter could very well be a hooker with a heart of gold. But here's the bottom line. He could also be a fucking snow job, just like fucking Al Gore. Okay? I am 100% convinced now that Al Gore is the walking, talking clown that they pump with all types of climate change, global warming, disinformation, just to keep people confused. He serves the purpose perfectly. He has just enough quasi-legitimacy to pull in a lot of rubes. But to anybody with common sense, he sounds like a buffoon. So yeah, I don't honestly know what the deal is with all this. Okay? I really, really don't know. But here's the thing. Here's the core topic, the core subject here about what we're talking about reality at this moment. We are currently, as human beings, dealing with a situation on planet Earth that I believe is related to us believing that we could do anything we want to without limits. Jimmy Carter tried to basically say, there are limits, okay? We have an energy crisis. We need to think about this. And it wasn't even at the time brought up as a global warming thing. But tell you the truth, if Dane Wigington is correct, then probably Jimmy Carter knew the deal back in the 1970s. He knew that we were locked into a terrible, terrible dance. And that if nothing were done, if no changes were made, we would be doomed. That very well could have been a briefing he received, and that would be the whole, well, this is why we need to do geoengineering. This is why we need to, excuse me, this is why we need to do all this crazy stuff in the sky, Mr. President, because if we don't, all of this comes to an end. And I get that pitch, that argument. I understand it. But I have been meditating on this question because there are a lot of people, especially in the libertarian movement, who have a notion of free enterprise that we can in fact have markets where there are no consequences because people will simply solve problems. Like we'll create problems and we'll solve them. Like we end up polluting a lake, which is a problem, and poisoning all the water and killing all the fish. But then that problem becomes an opportunity for somebody else. Yeah, the big dead lake that is a problem for you, you know, not least of which because of the smell from all the dead fish, well, that's an opportunity for somebody else. And there have been people who've written about quote-unquote disaster capitalism. And in a sense, I'm talking about that, but I'm also talking about something even uglier than just disaster capitalism. I'm talking about participating in communities, in marketplaces, without virtue, without any principles, without any ethics. I'm talking about people who would open up a shop. Let's say, you know, it was a shop where you were tanning leather and you were using lots of nasty chemicals. And you've got option A is to manage those chemicals in a safe way and keep them out of the water, okay? Option B is to take the fucking chemicals out back and pour them into the stream. The sad truth is there are a lot of people who do option B. My dad was an option B person. He would dump motor oil, like, just on the ground. He would just do it. He figured the earth was a giant happy sponge and it would soak it up and everything would be fine. What he never conceived of is that tens of millions of other people were doing exactly the fucking same thing. can we fuck and eat and devour ourselves to whatever extent we want without consequences? And the simple answer is no. And for those of you who say, well, ha, Dan, ha, I found the flaw in your fucking anarchism. You just brought up the dude dumping chemicals into the stream. If we don't have a magical agency like the EPA, it'll just happen again. So we need government. Blah, I won. QED, fuck you. Actually, no, your position is total bullshit. We have an EPA, and currently the American economy, the American society, is horribly toxifying the environment. The poisoning continues. And I would argue maybe as bad or worse, because what the EPA likely did is just made a lot of these companies smarter at being terribly shitty. So no, I don't buy this whole we have the EPA thing. I mean, I would contend if we stop treating corporations like citizens, that would be a big deal. But that decision was made by the Supreme Court more than 100 years ago. Corporations are like you and me, man. You know, Microsoft is like me. It's just like me. If I were a several billion pound, you know, sociopathic chimpanzee, then yes, Microsoft as a corporation would be just like me. But by treating corporations like citizens and not holding them to any consequences, yeah, we end up with a lot of fucking people dumping toxins into the streams in that, you know, figurative sense. I don't know what to tell you, folks. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. Faloa, faloa. That's Latin for stay away from Bothell. Stay away from Bothell, Washington. That's what faloa means. Kidding. But staying on this topic, because this is related to the whole, you know, because this comes up. This is the fucking perennial fucking argument. They'll say, we could put all the landfills in a tiny little postage stamp the size of a county in Nebraska, or we could fit a billion people in Texas. People will say shit like this, and no one ever calls them out on it. Okay? They'll say things like, there's plenty of space, you know? Ignore the fact that there's roughly 2 acres of habitable space on planet Earth. I say habitable. I mean space that's not the ocean, not 25,000 feet on a mountaintop, not a swamp, okay? Habitable space. There's roughly 2 acres for all 8 billion of us if we were to divvy it up equally. I hate to break it to you folks, but one human being, assuming that those 2 acres were not toxified by the last 100 years of industrial civilization, one human being is barely going to get by on 2 acres. You know, and when I say that, could you do well with 2 acres? You probably could, especially if you poured a lot of chemicals on it. But we're not talking about that world, folks. That's not the world that's coming. If we have a chance in hell of surviving, that's the world that should be in the rear fucking view mirror. The world where we just pour more chemicals on the land to have another fucking corn dog. Everything we do should have consequences. Everything. That whole argument about a billion people in Texas, it kind of reminds me of a fucking Titanic situation of some idiot that says, you know, I'm commander of this ship and I know everything. Wouldn't it be interesting if we took every fucking person on board this ship and just stack them on deck level 2, you know, in the stern, somewhere off the port side? Folks, that's a good formula for tipping over a fucking boat. A billion people in Texas. I know I keep bringing this up, but it's so fucking stupid. Every time I hear some fucking Cato Institute dude say, there's plenty of space, that's not fucking true. It's a bald-faced lie. We are already over the carrying capacity for apex predators called humans on planet Earth. We're way past that right now. The best thing we can hope for is a soft landing. That's it. if we're really, really lucky, and my God, folks, you have to listen to what I'm saying, because this is literally like winning the lottery lucky. If we are really lucky, okay, we will softly, and I say softly with sarcastic quotes, I don't know how we avoid a few more Fukushimas. I don't know how we avoid resource wars. But if we are really fucking lucky, we might bounce our way back down to a billion people in 100 years. And somehow there might be enough of the environment left that it can repair itself. But you're talking about odds that are very long, folks. And as I've brought up in the past, this is really critical. Much of what I'm talking about here depends upon what you believe. If you believe in God, like I do, then the very story I'm telling is only part of the story. Like, there's a whole other part of the story that we haven't seen yet. And frankly, I'm kind of interested. I'm intrigued. But if you don't believe in God, if you're an atheist, then rent Lars von Trier's Melancholia. Get yourself a few cases of whiskey and some cigarettes. Just deal with the fact that in a godless world, the human race has almost, well, probably fucked itself to death. And there is no hope, and there is no way out. In a godless world, you guys are basically fucked at this point. That is also the truth. I don't see a way out. Barring a miracle, barring divine intervention, I do not see how we get out of this mess. But if we're really, really lucky, and folks, we're talking about the kind of luck that almost never happens, I think we could be a billion people in 100 years. And we might even be a billion people that have recognized that in addition to clean air, clean water, and clean soil, humans also need liberty. Who knows? Maybe there is a path in the future to some place where the human race can heal, where Earth can heal, and where we can get away from this terrible, terrible game of selecting kings and queens and dictators and people to rule over us. And as stated in the past, I'm not talking about leadership. I'm not talking about leadership. Lots of people take on voluntary roles of leadership to coordinate other people. This happens all the time in the quote-unquote free market. You have people who have roles. These things happen. But these are not rulers, okay? These are not people that own you. We need to live in a society of leaders, not rulers. We need to live in a society of people who cooperate and coordinate and are active and interested. We don't need more followers, okay? Followers are bullshit. Followers, you know, when people say lead follower, get out of the way, you got to think about that for a second, because what it really is saying is that we have a caste system. But what I'm telling you is don't just be a follower. It's okay to get behind somebody, but really getting behind someone, really supporting someone in some plan, some activity, whether it's a startup business, whether it's a community activity to clean up a stream, really getting behind somebody means being active. So just don't be a follower, be a doer, be a participant. But I gotta say, folks, if you're one of these libertarians who believes that we can completely turn the planet into a giant toxic soup and it has no consequences, if you're one of these types, then I just ask and I pray, examine your values, examine your principles, and please reread Ayn Rand. Because nowhere in Ayn Rand does she say, oh yeah, and go ahead and be a human being without consequences. Actually, she talks a lot about consequences in the context of free will and choice. So let's kill that topic. Move on to the next one. Actually, the next one's pretty good. When you lose, you learn. Now, you might be asking, Dan, what the fuck do you mean by that? When you lose, you learn. Thank you. I don't know what a success is. In America today, if you listen to somebody, they'll give you a definition of a success. And that definition will be based upon someone's background, their demographic, where they're coming from. If you ask someone in one of the nicer neighborhoods of Seattle, what is a successful person? They would probably say, oh, somebody that owns a house. And probably they would say someone that owns a house in their neighborhood. That person would be a success if you have a house. And even if you don't own it, as long as you have a mortgage on a house that is gaining that magical 15% year on year, then you're a success, baby. If you're driving some brand new late model electric car, you're a success. If you buy the right food at the right stores, you're a success. If you wear the right clothes, you're a success. Some people would say if you married and had a family, I kind of agree with this definition to some extent. Some people would say if you have married and had a family, you're a success. If you are currently raising a family or have raised a family and you are doing the best you can in this upside down, sideways, fucked up reality, and you're like most people, you don't have a lot of money, then I would call you a success, especially if you love your children, you're trying to do it right, you're trying to care for them, not just let the system take them over, not just send them off to public school and say, oh, I hope the public school teaches them the difference between right and wrong. Not likely. But if you're a parent that's actually caring for your kids, then yes, I think you're a success. But if you're asking me, do I think I'm a success by any criteria, I'm not really sure. And I'm not really fucking sure I care. But I will say this. If I've learned things in my life, it is mainly a function of the following. I have made a lot of mistakes that didn't kill me. I have made a ton of mistakes in my life. I have had a lot of screw-ups. And obviously, logically, right, I am not dead. So, and I'm emphasizing this relationship because it's important. Because while, yes, you can learn from mistakes, you can only do so up to a point. And in a world like ours that is radically changing and filled with pitfalls and lots of deception, okay? Okay, lots of deception, lots of fucking quicksand, lots of fucking crocodiles. Kind of like that video game, you know, the Activision game, I think, Pitfall Pete for the Atari 2600 back in the early 80s. Lots of fucking crocodiles, lots of fucking trapdoors, lots of ways in which we can fail, and when I say fail, in some cases get killed. So it is not that easy to navigate what we call contemporary reality, especially when you're being fed a lot of bullshit, which is not a good way to navigate reality. It isn't. You know, if you're told things like, you know what, it turns out that animal fats and animal proteins are bad, and carbohydrates are good, and you're told this for 20 fucking years, and every year you keep gaining 10 or 15 pounds, either you're going to recognize that maybe you're being lied to, or you're just going to fucking eat yourself to death, eating a lot of poisonous shit. So navigating this reality in America right now is difficult, not just because it's difficult, but because you're navigating it blindfolded, a lot of you, because you're being fed nothing but bullshit. You're wearing these glasses. They're not just rose-colored glasses, folks. They're playing a movie on your glasses that isn't even remotely connected to the reality around you. And that's kind of dangerous. You often need to lose to learn. You often need to make mistakes to learn. It's better. It's great if you can be taught something and avoid the mistake without making it. Everybody loves that. But science is the study of consequences, and burning your hand on the hot oven is often a way to learn that you shouldn't do that. And that's also true. And these are the waters that we navigate. But does that mean that successful people, you know, probably have a lot of failures? I would probably argue yes. And let me explain what I mean. There are different kinds of success. There's a success in America today, like the fucking make-believe world that's basically surrounding you most of the time if you're locked in your smart device. There's a definition of success in America today that really shouldn't be success. It fits into this idea of how everything is ironically named now. But when I say success, I don't mean you're really rich because your parents are connected to some crony. That's not what I mean. I mean people that actually achieve something on their own. And this isn't easy to do. It's not easy to be an entrepreneur, especially in a crooked crony economy like ours. I'm not even sure how many actual entrepreneurs are left. There might be five. The rest are cronies. The rest are looking for handouts. The rest are trying to spin ICOs and beggar thy neighbor. The rest are living in fucking fantasy worlds. But there might be a few honest-to-goodness people starting businesses out there that want to do it the right way. They don't want a government handout. They don't want a government loan. They don't want to have anything to do with the crocodile if they can avoid it. And yeah, they probably pay their fucking taxes because, hey, see the thing about not having anything to do with the crocodile. The government. You don't want to mess with the government if you can avoid it. Because as stupid as the government is, it's also gigantic and monstrous, which means it's dangerous. Big and stupid equals dangerous. Did you know that? So yeah, you have to make mistakes to learn. And I've made a lot of them. But you also have to have the good luck to survive. Because if you make a bunch of mistakes, eventually, especially if you make the same one over and over again, your luck's going to run out. It's a math problem. It's not something that Americans talk about a lot because we live in this weird throwaway reality. We assume that problems are things you can crumple up, put in the garbage, and then somebody takes it away. That's not actually reality, folks. Your mistakes, your failures, especially when they're failures of virtue, and I've had one or two, especially when they're failures that result in harming other people, which I've had one or two. If you're a human being in this world, you probably said or done a few things you wish you could take back. But you live through them, and you learn, and hopefully you don't make the same mistake again. But let's say you're some asshole, and all you do is go around yelling at people. And I mean going around yelling at people. I don't mean you're some crazy old fuck like Uncle Dan with a weird-ass podcast screaming at the moon because the moon's crazy. I mean, what if you just went down the streets of Little Saigon? And all you did was say nasty, mean shit to every person you met. And I mean nasty, mean shit. Eventually, especially in Little Saigon, you're going to run into the wrong fucking customer. And you're going to say the wrong shit to the wrong person on the wrong fucking day. And that's just going to be, you know, wrong. Yeah. So yeah, you got to lose to learn. You got to make mistakes to learn. I think the human race, and I don't know if this is a conspiracy, like there's some cadre of people who are making it this way, but whether that's true or not, I think the entire human race has suffered from a weird kind of collective stupidity. You know, in a lot of ways, folks, the human discovery of high energy density fossil fuels, most especially oil, was a lot like some idiot winning the lottery. I mean it. Imagine you had some buffoon, and I don't mean a person with mental deficiencies. I mean literally a person who has the wrong paradigm, the wrong program, the wrong information, is basically stupid, basically an idiot, basically believes all the stupid government shit and also believes that, you know, the world operates according to magical rules. Imagine if an idiot wins the lottery. Now, sometimes that idiot might just survive a long time and maybe will just die, but that wealth will probably go away eventually. It'll disappear one way or the other. I think the human race discovering high energy density fossil fuels is way worse than an idiot winning the lottery. Because an idiot that wins the lottery could do dangerous, stupid shit. Like, for example, an idiot that wins the lottery might decide to buy a balloon and then go ballooning and not know how to do it and crash and die. An idiot that wins the lottery might end up buying a boat and crashing the boat and not just hurting himself, but hurting other people. An idiot that wins the lottery might be a dangerous idiot and might decide to do dangerous, crazy shit. And now they got the money to do it. Yay. An idiot that wins the lottery might build a fish farm in the Puget Sound. And you could say, well, Dan, what's the big deal about a salmon fish farm in the Puget Sound? I don't know. Do you know what kind of an ecological insult that is? Do you know how damaging that is to the ecosystem? Have you researched it? But an idiot would simply do that. The human race barely understood the natural world. Like, we barely, the periodic chart, the periodic table was barely a decade old when we started leveraging and using highly dense petroleum energy resources in the 1860s. We barely had a modern conception of the shape of the Earth. We barely understood geology in terms of how we understand it today by comparison. When we came across oil, we were worse than the idiot that wins the lottery. We won the super lottery. We won the scariest lottery in fucking history. That's what happened when we found oil. Because it was a test also. It was a test. And yet we didn't know it was a test. We didn't know. We should have known. We should have learned this lesson. It's not like humans hadn't done this before. There have been many empires, many civilizations, and there's one thing that many of them have in common in terms of their collapse. They used resources that were intrinsic to their society to the point that the resources disappeared. And then their society, their civilization, disappeared. We have built a civilization, a society around oil, whether we like it or not, whether we want to admit it or not. The world as we know it today is currently constructed around highly dense energy sources, and the only one we currently know how to work with in any effective way is oil. Oh, you could say nuclear, but if you say nuclear, I'm just going to say crazy. Every time you say nuclear, I'm going to say crazy. Everything you see around you. It's not like some things are related to horses and the use of oxen. No. It's not like some things are somehow connected to steam power. No. I mean, yes and no, but not really. The reality is everything around you is coal and oil and natural gas and highly dense hydrocarbon fossil fuels. That's reality. That's what's around you. And if you don't like the fossil fuel term, fine. Call it whatever you want to. Gumbus from the earth. But to my knowledge thus far, that gumbus is not being created at a rapid enough rate for us to use it. And oh, by the way, because we're using it, we're cooking the earth. You have to lose to learn. But my question is, given the past history of the human race, given all the wars, given all the dictators and all the fucking murder schemes and all the damage we've done, given the fact that in the state of Washington, when I was growing up, it was considered okay for people to go out in boats and steal the children of orca whales, so that they could be shipped away to a fucking theme park and live out the rest of their pathetic life in a fucking swimming pool, not one millionth the size they would need to live anything like a normal fucking life. And yeah, I'm old, but I'm not that old. That was just the 1970s, people. Yeah, human beings can learn. But then when you think about things like war, for example, how much have we really learned? What we've mainly learned is how to make war more efficient. That has been the truly great learning lesson in the history of warfare. It hasn't been that war is stupid, or that ultimately forcing people to murder each other is probably evil. No, the main lesson has been we can make it more efficient. We can increase the mechanical distance. We can reduce the PTSD to some extent. We can allow civilian society to continue while we're pummeling other civilian societies to dust. We'll make it more efficient. But the real lesson we should have learned is war is stupid. That no matter what the justification is, war is a waste of resources. And while I fully believe in any free society having a right of self-defense, in fact, I think it's a corollary to bullies suck. The corollary to bullies suck is that everybody should defend themselves or think about self-defense as almost an ethical matter. Because bullies are bullshit, and we need to be prepared to rebuke them, to tell them to go away. And I don't care if they're organized crime bullies, I don't care if they're political action group Antifa bullshit bullies. I don't care if they're government bullies with badges. We have to have the courage to rebuke them to say no. I'm not saying go to war. I'm not saying take violent action, especially when it comes to the government, because that's stupid. That will only end in one thing, in your destruction. But we have to be prepared at some point to say that some of the things we're doing are stupid. The bottom line is this, folks, and I don't want to beat this topic to death. It is true, you have to lose to learn, but only up to a point do you get away with it. Believe me, I am someone who's fucked up a lot in his life. I have made a lot of mistakes. I have the only, in some ways, I consider my existence, the fact that I am here podcasting right now, as a kind of elegant proof for God. Because I don't know how the fuck I'm still alive. Other than God. That's how many mistakes I've made. That's how much I've fucked up. That's how in debt I am. That is how financially discombobulated I am. That is my credit score. And oh, by the way, if we end up with a social credit score, I'm sure mine will be minus 9,000. And I'll be quite proud of that score. In fact, I'll be competing with Genghis Jim of Kentucky. He'll have a score of minus 5,500. Mainly because Genghis Jim posts pictures of cats being hung. And that gives him a bad score. You have to lose to learn. You have to make mistakes to learn, folks. But at some point, you do get killed by it. And because we're almost at an hour, I feel like I should close out this podcast. I'm not really sure how to express this, but let me just state the following. What if, and I'm just throwing this out here to close this thing out. Have you ever seen, those of you listening, the movie? It's a science fiction movie. I believe it's from the year 1970. And that, oh, by the way, that's also the year of my birth, but I could be wrong about the date. Not of my birth, but of when the movie came out, you fuck. There was a movie that came out roughly around the time I was born called The Forbin Project. And it had this ominous kind of, like, at one point, this ominous computer voice saying, you know, this is the voice of world control, blah, 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 blah. I actually consider The Forbin Project to be one of the best movies on artificial intelligence ever. And in some ways, chillingly accurate, not in the description of computers, because again, computers just kept getting smaller. But then again, stacking chips, which is also still a thing, is very much about supercomputing. So even though the envisioned supercomputer of the Forbin project probably wouldn't need to fill up a whole mountain, maybe it would only fill up an office floor in some building at this point, or a section of a server farm. The point is, anyways, they got some things probably wrong, but a lot of it they got right. And so if you haven't seen the Forbin project, I highly recommend it. And the reason why I'm talking about this tangent about the Forbin project and about Colossus the supercomputer, the main character in the movie, I forget his name, is this scientific computer science programmer type, this doctor of university degrees. And at one point, he ends up being kind of kidnapped by Colossus the supercomputer. And actually, the name of the doctor is Forbin, so it's Dr. Forbin. But anyways, Dr. Forbin gets basically kidnapped. So he's living in captivity, being watched all the time. Everything he does, everything he says, he's being listened to all the time. Colossus even listens to him fuck. And yeah, he manages to sneak a few secret messages to his fuck woman, his hoe. But at the end, and I don't want to give away the movie, the point is, dude, I'm not going to give away the movie. It's a really good movie. But I got to tell you, it's one of those movies that's a little bit chilling for the following reason. It's chilling because I feel like me personally and most of the people I know who quote-unquote live normal lives now are living a lot like Dr. Forbin once he's taken captive by the computer. We're being fed and we're being given water and we're being managed and minded and we're being told, you know, what we should be eating and what we shouldn't be eating. We're very well kept domestically in a sense. I mean, at least we are domesticated animals. And a lot like Dr. Forbin, that's how we live now. And also, folks, I don't know how we escaped that either. I guess to close out this podcast and to kind of tie things up in a knot, if such a thing is possible, it is true that we might survive as a species the next few decades. We might. I feel like if you're just a materialist, like if you're an atheist, and you subtract the supernatural, you subtract God, you subtract the spiritual. If you're solely an atheist about matter and energy and that's it, then I think the odds I would give you of the human race making it through the next few decades, this kind of disaster singularity of our own design, I feel like it might be 1 in 50. So I feel like there is a 1 in 50 chance the human race makes it in an atheist world. In a world where there's God, I think there's more to the story. I don't know what it is yet, but there's more to the story. Here's the thing, though. No matter what happens, and this is the thought I'm going to leave you with on this Friday night, before you go up to Broadway to shove objects up your anus like Glimbus, before you get up on Broadway and start shoving objects in your butthole, I got a question for you. If the human race survives the next 50 years, if we make it through the coming calamities, do you think we'll learn a damn thing? If the human race survives the coming monstrosities, the 12-foot-tall lamprey rats, if we survive the Gumbus Kings and the amoeba storms, if we survive the rise of the French bulldog armies once Beans learns how to make his own beer, if we survive all of that, the question I leave you with is really simple, and you can meditate on it while you're drinking your fucking whiskey or drinking your fucking beer or smoking your dupe, I don't care. Or drinking your coffee. Whatever beverage you drink, meditate on this before I let you go. If we survive the coming trials as a species, do you think we will have learned anything?